For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave, and I do mean cave. We are all back in a single cave now, practicing social distancing. And, you know, I've got the bottle of Lysol and everything else handy to clean up after us. I'm Kent Blanford in the cave with me, Mr. Mark Tuttle, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Good to see you guys again, not on a Zoom screen, but in reality. And we've got a lot to cover today with a special guest. She's back with the show for, I think this is maybe the third episode of The Cave. So she's third, maybe fourth episode that she's done with The Cave. So she has kind of stepped across that line from being just a guest to being part of the team.
Right.
We're talking with Dr. Gwen Adams today.
Hey, yeah, let's welcome Dr. Gwen Adams. Let me give you just a little bit about her. She is a writer, speaker, visiting professor of theology at the Augustine Institute in Denver, Colorado. Big fan of that organization. And she's the founder of Bard Street, which offers youth theater camps, seminars, and other types of ventures. So at bardstreet.com. So please welcome Dr. Gwen Adams. Welcome back to the Catholic Cave.
Thanks, you guys. I do love coming on. I think this might be the fifth time, actually. I have to go and count. I was going to say five or more would have been
my guess.
Well, at any rate, you are now dubbed an honorary cave person. So
you crossed the threshold.
Give us your...
Yeah, because we do tend to say caveman, which is kind of gender specific. So if you could also include your preferred pronouns at some point for the employment
cave
form.
Lady, that also sounds a little weird. Right. I'm going to steer clear of cave woman.
Right. Oh. Well, you know what? One of the things we've been anxiously and eagerly awaiting an opportunity to talk to you about, Dr. Adams, is your book that was published, and it's called By an Unexpected Way, which I love the title of that book, and this is really a fantastic book. Could you tell us a little bit about the book? Let's dive in a little bit. What is the book about?
Yeah, so a friend of mine, he's the dean at the Augustine Institute, Chris Bloom. He and I were talking after a conference that was hosted at Benedictine College on the book by Rod Dreher, The Benedict Option. And there are other books sort of in that same genre. I'm thinking Charles Chaput's Strangers in a Strange Land, kind of talking about the culture's falling apart, seems like, and what are Christians supposed to do? So Chris and I were talking, and Chris thought, you know, Christians have been doing things over the last 40 or so years, but they're kind of in hidden ways. Like, just think about the example of women's care centers. They just came out of nowhere. There had never been anything like that. There was a need, and people spend all this money and all this time offering free care to mothers and children and to fathers and to families. So why don't we tell stories like that? People really need encouragement and hope, and then it would probably also be very practical. So that was kind of the genesis for the book.
Well, that's fantastic. So it sounds like it might be, is it a compilation then of these different stories?
Yes. We ended with 10 stories that I chose, and they're all based on interviews. Some chapters are single interviews, and some had as many as 5 people working together to do interviews with me. But each one focuses on a different, I guess I would say, apostolate or work around the country, although I think it ended in saying a lot more than just how to start an apostolate. So,
now, yeah, define apostolate for us. I know that sounds like kind of a basic question, but we use the term all over the place. What exactly is an apostolate, and how does it differ from some other type of an organization?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, it's more than a job. It's I'm trying to find a word to describe doing something for the Lord that often looks very tangible. So the best way I know how to describe it is to describe some of the things in the book. So there's a Catholic school. There is a women's care center. There is a ministry to survivors of sex trafficking. There's a Catholic coffee house. There's a parish. There is a music group that's led by Catholics. There's a college. There's things like that. So I think those all fall under the umbrella of whatever we would call apostolate. Different ways of serving people, different ways of bringing the love of Christ and the truth to people. So
it seems like apostolates, and this is maybe one of the things I like most about your book, is apostolates seem to be fertile ground for creativity and ingenuity, often on the part of the laity, right? I think we often think of the Catholic Church, you know, 2,000 years old, this, you know, ancient and holy institution, that everything's sort of, everything's already in place, basically. And maybe as a Catholic, we think it's just, you know, we just simply join things. And we certainly do that. But it seems like the apostolates are that opportunity where, you know, one or more, again, it can be clergy, but it's often the laity, identify a need or opportunity to, as you mentioned, serve the Lord in a way that's not maybe being done yet locally in your communities. And then someone, you kind of gets moved by the Spirit, and they spring into action and build one of these apostolates to really serve, to serve our fellow man.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting, too, because you could almost read the book like a sort of self-help creativity book, kind of in a secular sense, because the people, they really do come up against all kinds of obstacles, from just red tape and institutional stupidity to...
I love that term. That's everywhere.
I know. It's horrible. And then, you know, sometimes... you know, things that you'd actually consider hostility because of the Catholic faith. And then having to find ways to respond. So, you know, they're praying all the time, and some of the things they come up with are just so creative and innovative. Sometimes they're presented with a problem. They weren't looking to do anything spectacular, but the problem came to them. I'm thinking, like, I think it's chapter 7 is about five guys in South Bend who realized that an adult bookstore was the largest in Indiana, was moving in right around homes and businesses and schools, and they were just upset about it. And then they thought, maybe we could actually do something. Is this legal? And so then they started doing all the work that they could to find ways to legally limit all the harm that comes from adult bookstores. And then they went on to strip clubs and all these kinds of trafficking fronts. And so none of them liked public speaking or liked going after that thing, but it kind of came to them. And then they had to figure out, how can I connect with other people? How can I educate myself in this? What are the questions to ask? Who do I need to talk to? Or kind of an opposite example, I interviewed Annie Powell, who started a Catholic adventure camp in the Colorado Rockies called Camp Wojtyla. And that's...
Oh, nice.
It's a wonderful place, and it's easy to Google it and to find the videos about the camp. But that's an idea that she had from about the age, from being a teenager. So it's not like a problem came to her. It's something that really kind of grew up in her heart from loving her faith and from loving camp. But she had to, you know, so they had all kinds of rules for starting camps. Just one that's actually has become turned into this wonderful tradition for the camp is they were not allowed to build any permanent structures. So they had to find
what?
A campsite.
No permanent structures?
So no cabins, nothing that...
No restrooms?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, so they had to be completely... portable, leave no trace. So she had wanted to do tree houses and cabin, you know, whatever you have on a campground, and that was all impossible. So then she got this idea of, what if we built teepees, 30-foot teepees that could sleep 6 to 8 people. And it was an answer to a problem. But now it's become kind of their trademark because everybody who goes to the camp has never, ever slept in anything like that. And they look amazing and they're fun and it's just interesting because she said, you know, something that was actually a huge headache is now sort of part of our brand. So anyway, it's just amazing to see how through prayer and a lot of thought and asking people, people persevere through all the kinds of challenges that come up in these things.
One of the questions I have is, I think most of us have very busy lives. So how do people find time to kind of start one of these new apostolates or get one of these new things? Like, how do you like fit it in on top of everything else? I mean, that to me is another kind of like amazing aspect of these things happening.
Oh, well, that's true. Some of the people, this did become their full-time life.
Okay, sure. Oh, that makes sense.
So that's true. Some of them did talk about it's been incredibly difficult to try to balance family and work and these things. One of the examples I just mentioned, the five men living in South Bend, one of them, when he was praying about this whole thing, not just because of the amount of work and his other obligations, but also because of the danger of taking on people who make a living through pornography. There's always connections to drugs and organized crime. So when he was thinking about that and praying, he just said, Lord, if I do this, this isn't just a little thing. This is my whole life we're talking about. So which is true. It's kind of, you know, these things, they can take a lot of work and a lot of courage and a lot of time. And so nobody said, oh, this is so easy.
right.
Yeah. But they didn't do it if they didn't think that it would be good for them personally and good and, you know, something God was wanting that would be good ultimately. And then they just kind of tried to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, these types of things have to be spirit-driven to a good extent. I mean, you can't just sort of decide you're going to do this. I mean, there has to be a lot of prayer put into it and a spiritual life to support it, and probably not just the person that founds it, but, you know, you probably need a whole community around you to spiritually support something like this.
Yeah. Actually, what you're saying just reminded me, one of the people I interviewed, the one who started the Catholic coffee shop, is actually a priest. And he said something like that. He's, you know, you're going to need a lawyer. You're going to need someone to advise you on business. And I didn't know how to do any of that stuff. But God sends you people. And then, interestingly, as the coffee shop blossomed, it just got to be way too much work for him to do in alongside his priestly ministries. And so, in the end, he gave it up to his lay board, which he said was totally appropriate because it was a lay apostolate anyway. So he's actually the one character that I interviewed who started something and then it was too much. And so he backed out. So it's kind of, there's also this idea that sometimes you might get involved in something and then it's okay to step away from it because it's God doesn't want it to be your whole life and this huge, massive thing you have to balance. It's maybe just for a time. So that's good too.
Well, speaking of stepping away, we are up at time for a break here. So we're going to have to take a little bit of a break, but we will be right back with more on the Catholic Cave in a moment.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave, and we are delighted to continue our conversation with Dr. Gwen Adams. She is a writer, speaker, visiting professor of theology at the Augustine Institute, and very, very active in theater, including offering youth theater camps, seminars, and other adventures. You can check out that work at bardstreet.com. We've been talking about right now about her recent book that came out, By an Unexpected Way. And, you know, that book, Dr. Adams, was published prior to the COVID-19, I call it the Wu Flu pandemic. And so what have you learned since publishing this book?
Well, it's when we first thought about the book, my friend Chris Bloom and I, we kind of drafted the back of the book, which said something like, nobody knows what the future will bring.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that the truth?
Holy moly, yeah. That's prophetic.
Oh, my gosh. And I'm thinking at the time, probably 2020 will be pretty much like 2017, but maybe 2030 won't be. Well, gosh, in 2017, we write that line. And then I'm finishing the book as the McCarrick and all those scandals came out.
Oh, yeah, the summer of shame.
Hard on people. Oh, my gosh. And then 2020 just, the book launched, and I started offering it to people and saying, like, you know, jumpstart your 2020. And 2020 was about to just be an insane year in so many ways.
Yeah, you don't jumpstart 2020. 2020 jumpstarts you, I think.
Yeah. As it turns out, yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm a little bit more like, does anybody want a plank? I've got this book. It kind of floats, at least for a while. So... but one thing that I learned while I was writing the book that has just become the, I think, my biggest takeaway was the idea of providence leading us, even when it does, when it really looks like the story is over. So I got that idea because I was, partly because the people communicated how much they suffered and the twists and the turns, and that's what led to the title of the book, By an Unexpected Way, which is a line from scripture describing the Israelites going through the desert. So you know, you're thinking like, where are we going? Is this even going to lead anywhere? So that's how the people in the book felt. And when I was writing it, particularly the chapter on the Women's Care Center in South Bend, and there are other great similar places. There's Matrix in Lafayette, Indiana, and there's just places in many cities around the country. I was wrapping up that chapter, and I just went online to kind of see how things were going with the Women's Care Center, and discovered that I had to rewrite the end of the chapter because when I drafted it, the South Bend abortion clinic, after many years, had been closed, shut down. And it was an amazing thing that finally that terrible place was closed. So I'm writing my chapter. I go online just to see what's going on, and I see there's a new group getting ready to start a new clinic in South Bend. So I, of course, I'm thinking, well, the Women's Care Center, they always try to see if they can have a place nearby to offer you other opportunities and choices and all the help that you will need. So sure enough, yeah, they were trying to start another location near where this clinic would be located. And they had actually, they'd gotten the space, they'd gotten the money to purchase the space. The city council had reapproved the zoning that they needed to start this new women's care center. And then just as everything seemed to be moving forward, the then South Bend mayor vetoed the zoning for saying he didn't want to create more political struggles in that neighborhood. So then, okay, they couldn't open there. And then somebody donated them a perfectly zoned property across the street.
Oh, wow.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like trying to turn my book in, but I'm like, wait, got to add this part, got to add this part. I just thought, you know, the story's never over. Like, it won't be over till the last judgment, really, you know? So, you know, you try to end a book, you know, the end, you're like, not really, sort of more like the beginning or the middle, you know? So that's what I got when I finished the book, and then it just kept happening. So I mentioned one of the chapters, the Ministry to Survivors of Sex Trafficking in California. That's a ministry called Children of the Immaculate Heart. It's run by Grace Williams, and you may have even heard about this because they were hoping to open a shelter for minors survivors. And they would be able to offer them schooling that would help them catch up, and job training and therapy and music therapy and equine therapy. And there's a chapel. It's a beautiful space. But it was supposed to open before I finished the book. And they just kept not getting their license. They kept being, it was just taking a lot longer than it usually takes. So I asked Grace, like, well, do you think I should use past tense or what? How should I say it? In 2019, the refuge opened. And she said, oh, well, when's your book coming out? And I told her August 2019. She said, oh, we're supposed to be open in February 2019. I'm like, okay, I'll write it past tense. Oh, no. August 2019 rolls around.
Yeah.
My book comes out and the refuge is still closed.
Oh,
they
no.
They have been stonewalled so long by the state of California, who would not grant them a license. And eventually they had to bring a lawsuit with, I think it's the Thomas More Society that helps people with, do you know this? Catholic.
I'm familiar with Thomas More, yeah, society.
Yeah, religious liberty lawsuit.
Right.
So they had to bring a lawsuit because it appeared that they were being stonewalled because they were refusing to take the minors who would live in the home to LGBTQ events, to take them for abortions and to provide them with gender transforming drugs if they so desired.
Oh, good Lord.
I know. They were not going to prevent the minors in the home from accessing those services. They were just saying, we can't provide those because we're a Catholic nonprofit organization. So, I mean, it's so minimal, the no that they were saying, but it was too much of a no for those who were supposed to grant the license. It was really terrible. At one point, Grace Williams was interviewed, and she said, it's more important that these kinds of services are available to the minors than the fact that we're trying to get them out of a situation where they're being raped 10 times a day.
Right.
So, I mean, it's terrible. So that was going on all winter. And then on June 29th, just a couple weeks ago, they settled and the state backed down. They got their license and they're opening in August.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh,
isn't
God.
That awesome? Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of what I mean. Like, you know, the book stops at one point, but all these people, we just got to keep following the Lord and, you know, keep fighting, keep asking for help. And, you know, there may be a book, too, saying, like, where are we now? Where are we now? And I could tell you something similar for almost every chapter.
Right. Now, you said that this book was inspired to a certain extent by the Benedict Option, by Archbishop Chaput's book, by other books that are, I mean, quite honestly, they're pretty pessimistic. You know, they look at the culture and they kind of conclude, you know, we have to regroup as Christians and Catholics to start to transform the culture because, quite honestly, we've lost. Did you find in writing your book that it was a more optimistic, I guess after you were done with the book, were you more optimistic about things or were you more pessimistic about things? Because, you know, these are some pretty tough stories that you're telling.
Yeah. I guess I would say hopeful. But a hope in the Lord. Not a hope that the culture would turn around, but a hope in the Lord, and that if God wants it, He, no matter how bad the culture gets, He will make it possible to do good things. For how long? I don't know. I definitely had the feeling when I was interviewing people at Benedictine College, great Catholic college out in Atchison, Kansas. But they're talking about their own story. They mentioned some educators at the University of Kansas back in the 70s, John Senior, Frank Nellick, and Dennis Quinn, who decided to offer a kind of a classical humanities-based education to their students. And they took them stargazing, and they did seminars, and they read great books, Shakespeare, and they did study abroad trips. And it was kind of an education in truth, goodness, and beauty. And it was so good that, in fact, it started creating a lot of converts to the Catholic faith, although that had not been any kind of goal. But there were so many converts that ended up leading to ACLU suing them and shutting the program down.
Oh, jeez. That's horrible.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys have ever heard the story. Yeah,
I've not heard that part of the story. I've heard of John Senior and kind of a Great Books kind of program that he started that was successful. I had no idea that had happened.
No, yeah. It was the Integrated Humanities Program, and I think it lasted 6-8 years. Well, it had a huge impact, though. I mean, some of their students are still doing great work. The most famous ones that I know of are Bishop James Conley is a student of that program and a convert from that program, and so is I think it's Bishop Oakley down in Oklahoma. He is also a student of that program. And there are lots of other people who went through that program and started schools and wrote books and you name it. They, too, have given to the church. Well, anyway, the people at Benedictine College referenced that. And I just thought, and that program, it got shut down. And I wondered, wow, you know, any of the people I'm interviewing right now, they too could get shut down. And I wonder, that's really plausible. I wonder who it will be. And actually, I was kind of surprised, one of the chapters that I did was on my own parish in the Diocese of Lafayette, St. Boniface, on Father Timothy Alkire, who was assigned there in 1994 after there was a sex scandal. And so he came into the parish in a really just awkward situation, and then kind of unexpectedly stayed at the parish, remained assigned there for 20 years. And some, you know, out of a lot of mess and a terrible situation, a lot of really great things happened, a lot of Christian culture, a lot of Eucharistic adoration, a lot of vocations. And so I wrote about that parish just kind of as an example of, you know, living an apostolate sort of in a parish setting. But the book came out, and then Father's been reassigned just a couple months ago, and I was like, okay, that was really great while it lasted. it's really sad too for me, because it's my parish, and it was the story that I was closest to. So I've been thinking, I wonder which one of these apostolates or stories is going to have the most dramatic change soonest. Oh, that one. Okay. Well, you know, it's like I keep saying, the story's not over, not till the last judgment. We go through these twists and turns, we get this news, it's just really hard. And then something changes and new good things come. Though it can be really hard to believe that. But I guess I to answer your question this really long way, Mark, I guess I got hope, but not optimism that it's all going to work out in an earthly cultural sense. I expect there will be more suffering and more sacrifices, but I also think God's in charge. So,
and with that, we need to take a break. We'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Have you been married and have since divorced? Do you think your marital status prevents you from coming to church? Most Catholics and non-Catholics unfortunately have a lot of misconceptions about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Pope Francis has recently encouraged all people with questions about marriage to make an appointment and talk with their parish priest. As Catholic priests, we look forward to the opportunity to help you on your journey through life. Please make an appointment to speak with the priest today. We are and will always be here for you.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. We are having a wonderful conversation with Dr. Gwen Adams. We've been talking about her book. She's a writer, speaker. She's a professor of theology at the Augustine Institute. And I'm delighted to pivot the conversation to talk really about her involvement with theater. So super excited to find more out about that. I mentioned the website bardstreet.com, but Dr. Adams, what are you up to with theater? Tell us a little bit about some of your initiatives and activities there.
Yeah, so I have been directing plays for 20 years, but I took a long absence while I was working on my dissertation. So I am really happy to be going back to it. Last summer, I started with a summer theater camp down in Louisville at a Catholic school called Holy Angels Academy. And we did a big camp with 40 students and put on Puss in Boots. It's just a fun fairy tale. And there's a little bit of Catholic themes and redemption and sacrifice in there. And then it's just really fun. So we did that. And so now I live in Lafayette. So I am launching an adult company and a youth cast this year. We're going to start practices in the fall for anybody who, so there's auditions at the end of August and registration's open right now. So you can go to my website, bardstreet.com, and find everything you need to know about theater and when and where. And we're going to be staging The Other Wise Men, a festival of lessons and carols, which is an adaptation that I wrote of Henry Van Dyke's story, The Other Wise Men. Are you guys familiar with that story?
I am familiar with that. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not so much. What's it about?
So it's pretty short little story about a fourth wise man who originally planned to go with the three wise men to find the king who's worthy to be served, and that they had discerned through prophecies and reading the stars. But he got sidetracked. He was a little bit late, and then he had to help a poor old man. And as he gets parted from the three wise men, he ends up not ever being at the right place at the right time. He's got gifts to give the Christ child, but he keeps using them because these emergencies come up. So he uses one to because of having to take care of the elderly man. And then he gets to Bethlehem, not in time for the nativity, but in time for the slaughter of the holy innocents. And he uses another jewel to save one of the babies and deliver him back to his mother. So that kind of thing keeps happening. So he spends his whole life looking for Jesus, and he comes on the tail end of the way of the cross. So I won't give the ending away, but that's kind of the basic story about this lifelong search for Jesus. And I adapted it so that it is sort of like lessons and carols, only it's, instead of the scripture readings, which would be the lessons, it's the play. And so so you have parts of the play going on, and then during the play or at certain points when the fourth wise man lies down to sleep, he has these dreams, and then we have the carols. So it's a little bit like a musical, a little bit like lessons and carols, and then it's just this really beautiful story of the fourth wise man. So,
well, what a great story. What a great way to tell more, fill in more details about – really the gospel narratives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I worked in some other things that are kind of associated with the Christmas story. Some things from the gospel. So the fourth wise man, he has these dreams. So I have him dreaming the Annunciation. Then I have him dreaming the Visitation, then the Nativity. So you get a lot more of the scriptures than is in the original story. And then I also incorporated these gypsies who come in and out of various scenes. And part of this gypsy band, this is another nativity story, is the legend of St. Dismas. So he's the good thief that died on one side of Christ. But there's an old, old medieval legend that St. Dismas was part of a band of robbers that tried to rob the Holy Family when they were on the flight into Egypt.
Oh, jeez.
yeah. But and the encounter with Our Lady and Jesus. So Dismas was a child, and he had leprosy. And encountering Mary and Jesus cured him of leprosy. So then the robbers did not rob the Holy Family, and they tried to amend their ways with not much success. So Dismas is a thief at the end of his life. But then he's the good thief, and he re-meets Jesus on the cross. So that's a legend. I thought, this is so great. We're going to work this whole story in. So they meet on the flight into Egypt, and they do the whole cure and all that. And there's music. And so it is just a very fun play. So.
It's got me really interested. Like, I think I want to go to your website and see an audition to be like an extra gypsy, like a non-speaking role. Yeah. I just kind of show up and, you know, fit it. You know, that way I don't think I have any acting skills.
Yeah, but
I got a face for radio, so you really don't want to see me too much of me.
Yeah, you know, but every gypsy band needs cave gypsies.
Correct.
You got to work the cave gypsies.
Well, I just wonder if I can get a 3X gypsy costume.
Oh, that's funny. Right. Yeah.
So, but that does sound wonderful. I mean, what a great way to find a compelling way, interesting way, dramatic way. To share the truths of our faith and draw people in.
Yeah. Yep. And Dr. Gwen, I've got to ask, we've been spending time, we spent last couple segments talking about inspirations for other apostolates. How did Bard Street come to be? What's the backstory? What's the inspiration for putting something like Bard Street together?
Oh, yeah. So I have always loved to do theater, but the idea of doing it even if... So when I directed plays originally in the first sort of maybe 15 years of my life, it was my working life. it was part of a job I was already doing. I was working at a school. I was working at a parish. And so they thought I got permission to, can I do a play as part of my duties? But then I work for the Augustine Institute and I'm a writer. There wasn't anybody asking me or saying that I could make it part of my job to do theater. So it just sort of looked like, well, then you won't do theater. But I love it. And I really, really think it is a way to communicate the truth, beauty and goodness in a way that the culture can take in. I'm really inspired by John Paul II. I'm inspired by the people in my book. They don't know how to start businesses. They don't know where to get legal advice, etc. But they just pray about something and then they went ahead and did it. So I thought, well, I'll go ahead and do it. And then I quickly began to find, like the people in my book, that there's all these obstacles that you don't foresee. Why did I pick 2020 to start a theater group when we're not allowed to be in the same room? And right now I've got to figure out, I secured this beautiful practice space. But right now, at least, the policy is that you must wear masks at all time or lose the possibility of using that practice space. So now I got to think, well, how are we going to do a play with masks? I mean, you can, but I don't exactly like the idea of putting a mask on Jesus or Mary.
Yeah,
could we do it in a really stylized way? You know, Greek masks, Commedia masks. Anyway, it's a big problem. There's no easy solution.
Well, you were talking about half the characters are either bandits or gypsies. So, you know, gypsies and bandits, I would see that as part of the costume wearing masks.
Yeah, they'll be fine. We'll be really hot, but oh gosh. Well, I gotta remember the people that I interviewed in my book. They really inspire me, and they keep reminding me that it's not always the devil that you're facing. Sometimes it's that, and then what do you do then? You know, you cling to Jesus. Sometimes you're just facing like little headaches, and what do you do then? Even when they're even more annoying than maybe facing the devil, you cling to Jesus.
Right.
He will help you figure out what to do.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'm reminded of Bulgakov, where the devil shows up as a bureaucrat. So the devil is a bureaucrat. So. but on the serious side with your apostolate, you know, I think it's Bishop Robert Barron, and he might be quoting somebody else, but he has said a couple of times that, you know, our culture is not going to be converted by preaching or by, evangelization directly. Our culture is going to be converted by beauty. And, this next generation coming up, particularly, it's going to be an aesthetic appeal to the religion. So talk a little bit about that. How does something like Bard Street play into evangelization?
I think you are able to convey truth through stories in a way that people do not feel that they're being preached at or condemned, because the stories The stories are about people living out, living through difficulties, and it's a person. It's not about sentences or platitudes. It's lived up in a life, and they're real. And in a good play, the characters, they're like real people. They're not plaster saints. They ask themselves, and they let us listen to even their sort of asides, which are supposed to be these things they're thinking in their head. They say them out loud. Should I do this? Should I do that? And that really wins people to, it helps them connect with the characters. And so it draws them into the story. So even when they, even if, you ask an audience member, are you committed to Christ? Would you spend your whole life searching for him? And they would have to say, honestly, no. They really sort of admire it in this particular fourth wise man. He's just to see what he goes through. And if you start to admire the good, that's like the first step towards doing the good, towards following the good, and not just the good, but Jesus, God. So I think that is the evangelistic power. And I think it has other kinds of power, too. There's a lot of mutual support and charity that goes on between actors and crew members because of stage fright and the work that goes into it. And you might not normally lend a hand to other people, but in the midst of a play, you sort of do. I have just seen it, and that's really beautiful, that kind of opportunity to help other people do something difficult.
We need to take a break.
I could go on, but.
And we'll let you go on right after this break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy. We'll be back with more of Dr. Gwen Adams right after this.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave, and we are in our final segment here in the Catholic Cave with our wonderful, I don't want to say guest because she's transitioned. I know we like to use that word transitioned. In this, I'm using the word in a very particular way.
Evolved.
Yeah. Evolved is probably better.
Evolved.
For the cave terminology, to be an honorary member of the Catholic Cave. And it's Dr. Gwen Adams. And we've been talking about her book. We've been talking about her work in the theater. And I want to kind of pick up on, and maybe, I don't know if we want to combine both those things, but I really am interested, Dr. Adams, in what's your assessment if speculate a little bit if you like. We're in a obviously with the pandemic, quarantine, lots and lots of stuff has changed. There, people are talking about like a new normal or reaching a kind of equilibrium. If I were to ask you to kind of think about 2021 and beyond, are you picking up on, or what's your sense about how maybe say let's start with maybe even parish life. How might parish life need to change or evolve or transition?
Oh,
you stumped,
yeah, exactly.
You stumped her, Tim.
Wow. Right. Well, honestly, I would have to say, not in any particular way. This is probably really controversial, but I think what I see in 2020 is a combination of the culture's, a combination of the loss of faith in our culture with the increased anxiety. They say there's a mental health care crisis, there's a growing percentage of people suffering diagnosed anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then there's the general evils in our culture with let's start with just abortion. Those things, they all have an impact on how people understand their faith, on their courage, on their ability to stay faithful. faithful on what they want. Do they even want to go to church on Sunday? Or is live stream just fine? Or maybe nothing? Mm-hmm. So what 2021, I'd say, like, I don't know if there's any change I would recommend except to advocate what I was advocating before 2020, which was nothing is more important than Jesus. If we don't have Jesus, this is Benedict XVI said this. Everybody who loves Christ has said this. If you don't have Jesus, then you're sunk. There's nothing. There's nothing left. So any practical changes or practical, let's stick with this, I would say has to come out of, love for the Eucharist, love for the sacraments, love to follow Christ no matter what it takes. So I feel like 2020 is caught up with a lot of earthly, surfacey things that we're thinking about, like there is no God, like there is no afterlife. Does that make sense? Probably not. I'm not sure how to answer your question.
No, yeah. I think you really have begun to answer, because I don't think anyone's at a point where there's definitive, conclusive, hey, this is exactly my position or my perspective or where I'm 100% confident of where things might be headed. I think that's, you're actually touching on what I think is kind of a great perplexity about our current setting and what may emerge, and then tying that into a great profound mystery with a capital M, as Catholics understand that word, that there's a profound mystery, I think, unfolding right before us and with us in it.
Yeah, but you've also brought the whole conversation full circle to a certain extent, because as things are emerging from this, I guess where sin abounds, grace abounds. And so people are going to be inspired by the Holy Spirit to address these problems and these issues that come up. And that's what your book dealt with. It dealt with people finding cultural problems and issues out there and then responding to the promptings of the Holy Spirit. What kinds of advice do you think come out of your book or stories of the people in your book? What kinds of advice would you have for somebody that might be feeling a little bit of there's these huge problems going on and I'm kind of feeling little twinges of there might be solutions that I could bring about. What kind of advice do you have for somebody that might be getting kind of those little Holy Spirit type of promptings?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's two things. One is, it's not necessarily from the book, but it's just something I've been perceiving. I remember that Benedict XVI said ages ago that maybe the church would be smaller, that there's these kinds of evils going on in the culture. They're kind of like a winnowing fire. Like, you know, they're so tough that some people who can't weather the toughness, or it's sort of like the parable we just had on Sunday about the seed falls on the ground and the thorns choke it, or it falls on the stones. You know, some people, they're not going to stick with the church. So I've noticed that it's getting too hard for some people, and I see that. But then I've also seen heroism in unlikely places. I have seen lay people and priests suddenly doing things, saying things, acting in heroic ways that I had never expected to come from that quarter, preaching on fire, people witnessing to Christ. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know you cared. So inspiring. That's the first thing, is I guess to just watch the signs of the times, just to watch and to allow yourself to notice when the heroism does happen, because that is very inspiring. And then the second thing that I did learn from my book was that all the people in there had an intense awareness of their own frailty, their own smallness, their own, their just lack of expertise, all the things that they thought that they wanted to start or thought maybe needed to be started were way bigger than any one person could do. More workload, more money needed, more different kinds of players involved. And skills like public speaking. This person isn't good at that. This person isn't good at navigating conflict. This person doesn't like crowds, whatever. you know, they all said, like, I don't have the gift that this takes. Just like Moses, right? And
yeah.
I think that's okay. They learned in practice something that John Paul II said that I tried to bring out in the book, is that we need to be docile to the Holy Spirit. And it's really not about, like, taking a stand or moving boldly. It's about following the Holy Spirit and consulting him every day. They all prayed every day, constantly, asking, so is this a good thing? Is this a right thing? Should I back out? Should I ask for help? What can I do? Is this good? You know, long conversations with God, one of the people said. Fervent, powerful conversations with God. So I think that's the main thing, is to kind of allow God to lead you through the desert, through the green spaces, rather than try to figure it out yourself, because we just don't have that power. So
yeah, I think, you know, when you're talking about vocations and things like that, I've heard somebody say that if you feel like you're being called to do something that you're prepared for and you're worthy for, then you're probably not. You're probably not prepared for it or worthy for it if
right.
you feel that way. So
right.
yeah, it tends to be the opposite. And yeah, there's so many biblical models of that, whether it's Moses, whether it's David, of people that feel like, I can't do this. I'm not the right person for this job. And that's exactly why God picks them out to be the person that leads those initiatives.
So yeah, we've been speaking with Dr. Gwen Adams and about her book, By an Unexpected Way. Pick it up at a Catholic bookstore, Amazon, places like that. Also, bardstreet.com, where you can find out her latest initiative with theater. Dr. Adams, so just got a few minutes left. What are some of the upcoming projects, initiatives, things that you're working on and things that we can look forward to hearing more about from you down the road?
Oh, well, I'll soon... So hopefully we'll be getting the Other Wise Men play underway with practices in the fall. So
with me as a gypsy? With me as a gypsy? I just want to throw that in.
Yeah,
possibly,
yeah.
Assuming I pass the audition.
Yeah, so anybody is welcome to apply. So if you can get here to practice, for the youth cast, bring your kids. So if you can hear this show, please consider applying to join our fun show. So we'll be doing that, and then I'll be posting information about tickets and the shows. And if the cast is interested, I kind of like to tour the show around, you know, within an hour's distance of our location. And then I'm working on, depending on the size of the groups, on launching a spring play and... a spring play and then a fall play. So for the fall, I've already picked probably Macbeth. I'm still thinking about what spring play will do because I want it to fit the cast. So those are the
Macbeth is my favorite Shakespeare play, by the way. That's my favorite.
Macbeth, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes I show it in my ethics class. I make them watch it because I don't think anyone should be able to. This one I'm teaching at community college. I don't think anyone should be able to make it through college without being exposed to Shakespeare. So that's how I make sure that box gets checked.
Oh, that's cool. In 2024, not 2020, because we don't need any more heat right now, but 2024, I'm going to do a very political play, Julius Caesar. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
Yeah.
Not now.
Yeah, I saw a version of Julius Caesar where they the costuming. I mean, they did the play was done straight up, mm-hmm. but the costuming was with men in business suits, and you know, Caesar mm-hmm. came out in like a bomber jacket, you know, like a president might wear. So they changed the costuming around it mm-hmm. to make a really powerful modern political statement.
By
changing the costuming.
The one I like is Richard II had. There's a DVD out with Ian McKellen. And it's kind of like got a World War II kind of feel to it. But anyway, I think we're out of time. Kent's giving me that evil eye.
That is all the time that we have. For Mark Tuttle, for Timothy O'Donnell, I'm Kent Blanford. Until the next time, be good, be holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.